Hello, and welcome to Here and Now. Today is Friday the 10th of October, and it's the Green Team, gathered here to read you items from the Dawlish Gazette and the Tynmouth Post. My name is Gwen Wedden, and today I'm joined by Graham and Lynn. Let's meet them.
Hello, I'm Graham, and my Tynmouth Post headline today, the first one is Red Roses Inspire Next Generation in Tynmouth. Nearly 100 girls got the chance to meet and train with two Rugby World Cup winners at a festival in Tynmouth on Sunday. Red Roses, Maddie Fonaty and Claudia Maloney MacDonald, who were part of the England team that won the Rugby World Cup last weekend, took part in the festival at Tynmouth Rugby Club aimed at inspiring the next generation. For us to be able to come here and hopefully have a little influence, even if it's just on one or two people's rugby careers, then that would be amazing, Claudia said. This is exactly our goal, to inspire the girls in the next generation, Maddie added. Around 30 of the girls attending the event were trying the sport for the first time. Some of these girls haven't played rugby before, so just them seeing us do it and then wanting to get involved is really all we wanted, Maddie added. After taking part in rugby training activities, the girls got the chance to ask Claudia and Maddie questions about their journey from grassroots to Rugby World Cup success and have their photos taken with the England stars. It's inspiring for them to be able to meet the people they've watched on TV and watched in the stadiums, but also to see that they can achieve this for themselves, commented parent Kath Wilson. It was an incredible day, commented Tynmouth Rugby Club head of girls and women, Paul Scott. It was especially exciting to introduce the sport to girls who had never played before. While at Tynmouth Rugby Club, Claudia and Maddie officially opened the new changing rooms. Without these new changing rooms, which give us more space so we can host games for different age groups and males and females, we wouldn't be able to hold events like these, said Tynmouth Rugby Club Chair Mark Layton. And I must say here, I have half a dozen photographs, very, very interesting, very attractive, and quite a few girls and the two England players, as it were, the adults, having a most wonderful time by the looks of things.
Hello, I'm Lynn, and I've got the Dawlish Gazette headline, Reggie the Rogue Swans into Town. A new kid on the block is expected to join the Black Swan clan in Dawlish. Reggie, the rogue black swan, has caused a stir since he turned up in Stratford-upon-Avon. The birthplace of William Shakespeare had a healthy population of white mute swans, but Reggie soon gained a reputation as a troublemaker. Reggie, as he's christened by residents, seems to appear from nowhere, but his behaviour has led to his eviction from the River Avon. He has become infamous in the town after setting up home there 9 months ago, standing out among the native white swan population and terrorising other birds and even the tourists. Local swan keeper Cyril Dennis, a former mayor of Stratford-upon-Avon, soon wised up to Reggie's antics and named him Mr. Terminator due to his aggressive nature. Reggie has attacked and driven away a male mute swan and moved in on its mate. After what Cyril was called further argy-bargy, and after consulting the king's swan man, David Barber, the decision was made to move Reggie on. Cyril said it's time for him to be removed from the river. The last 3 or 4 weeks he's caused an enormous amount of trouble and he's tried to take over and even tried to drown a pair of mute swans. Black swans are not native to our rivers, and it's hard to say where he came from. Reggie has since been taken to the vets before he can be rehomed in Dawlish. Cyril added, it's the best thing for him. He'll have so many mates, he'll be saying, why in heaven's name did I spend 9 months in Stratford-upon-Avon? I've been talking to the Dawlish warden about it, and it has been agreed that he will take him. I'm so grateful and relieved, as I just didn't want him to go just anywhere. In Dawlish, he'll be among his own kind. Swans are very interesting animals, but the mute swans are very different from the black swans, and Reggie is currently being kept in a holding pen until he's moved. Dawlish is worried about e-bike hazards. E-bikes are continuing to cause trouble for residents in Dawlish, with complaints of riders using them dangerously. Police have said they will be cracking down following reports of intimidation and antisocial behaviour involving the bikes. In a report to town councillors, officers said they had identified addresses where e-bikes were kept after several reports of them being used in Curlew Way. A spokesman said parents and children riding bikes have been visited and strong words of advice given. Bikes photographed and will be seized with Road Traffic Act powers if there are any further reports of antisocial behaviour. Dawlish Police also said there is continuing intelligence development around e-bikes being used in crime. Now there are reports of both e-bikes and e-scooters zooming along various residential streets. Some riders are wearing dark clothing with no lights and speeding, and with fears that an accident is going to happen. Elm Grove Road has been reported as one location where the riders have been causing problems. One parent said, I am genuinely concerned as they are zooming up and down so fast, and with the speed cars go along, there is surely going to be an accident soon. Others report the bikes going down the middle of the road without lights and the riders not wearing helmets. One driver said, he was zooming down the middle of the roads last time. He missed me by an inch. No lights, no helmet. Another rider was said to have ridden down Swan Park at a ridiculous speed. And yet another resident said, we have had a few incidents in Carhake's Way with these. They go so fast, and I don't see many with helmets on either, which is concerning at that speed. There was a report of a boy being hurt after a collision with an e-scooter, with claims that the injuries he sustained were the equivalent of being involved in a high-speed car crash. Another driver reported one of the bikes whizzed past very fast on the corner of Elm Grove Road. He said, one of them is going to get hurt, and going at that speed without a helmet on is very dangerous. Devon and Cornwall police have already seized hundreds of e-bikes and e-scooters which have been illegally modified, ridden without insurance, involved in a serious collision, or used in crime. In August, officers in Plymouth carried out an operation to keep roads safe and address public concerns targeting illegally modified e-bikes and focusing on dangerous bikes and reckless riders. Electric bikes can be ridden without a license or insurance by anyone aged 14 or over. It must have pedals used to propel it, have an electric motor that can run at a maximum power of 250 watts, and have no electrical assistance once it reaches 15.5 miles per hour. If an e-bike fails to meet the regulations, it will be treated by police as a motor vehicle, which means riders must wear a helmet and have a valid driving license, insurance, and registration.
Zoo pledges animals first amid sale reports. Paignton Zoo has pledged to put the welfare of its animals first amid reports that it has been put up for sale. The zoo has faced a succession of challenges since the first COVID outbreak in 2020, including an outbreak of avian flu, the effects of the costs of living crisis, and problems moving animals between European zoos caused by Brexit. Last year it cited crippling costs and said huge savings would have to be made. Now it is confirmed that it is looking for potential investors to step in. Reports emerged yesterday that the charity behind the zoo, the Wild Planet Trust, had put the estate, which runs to more than 100 acres, on the market. More than 2,000 animals live on the site, which employs more than 200 people. A statement from the trust said, "Our unwavering commitment remains on providing our animals with the highest levels of welfare and husbandry, ensuring all of their physical, emotional, and environmental needs are met. Securing investment will secure we protect the long-term future of our conservation charity and continuing to help halt species decline." The trust, which also operates New Key Zoo in Cornwall and a nature reserve at Slapton in South Devon, said confidentiality was crucial to the process of finding new investors. The statement went on, "We have previously shared information regarding the financial challenges that we face, and whilst we have already taken appropriate action to try to ease these challenges, this is another avenue for us to investigate. We will share more information when we are able to."
Former Land Army girl Kathy turns 100 years old. A former Land Army girl has celebrated her 100th birthday at a Tynmouth care home. Ethel Mould, known as Kathy, was joined by family and other residents at Croft Lodge to mark the occasion. The celebration brought together Kathy's loved ones from across the country. Residents, guests and staff gathered in the lounge, which was transformed for the occasion with live music, a buffet and a birthday cake for the inspiring centenarian. Kathy, who served in the Women's Land Army during World War II, is known for her kindness, wit and wonderful stories. Following the war, she dedicated her working life to caring for others as a healthcare assistant in hospitals. Speaking about her love for travel and cars, Kathy said, "I used to love to drive fast in my red Jag with the wind in my hair, but you can't do that these days." Kathy's family described the day as a very special one, thanking the team at Croft Lodge Home for going above and beyond for her. A highlight of the afternoon was a performance by a live singer, with residents singing along, dancing and enjoying the music. A photo display of Kathy's life captured moments from her time in the Land Army and her career in healthcare and her travels abroad with her husband Tony, including a particularly memorable trip to Australia. And her advice to the younger generation? "Just be kind to everyone. It goes a long way," she said. Sharon Gerwood, registered manager at Croft Lodge, said, "Kathy is an absolute treasure. It was a real privilege to celebrate her 100th birthday with her. The warmth, love and laughter in the room was everything we could have hoped for. Kathy's life story is full of strength, compassion and adventure, and we wanted to honour that in a way that felt truly special for her. We're so grateful to her family for joining in with us and to the team here who made it a real day to remember." There's a lovely photo of Kathy sitting in her chair with a photograph of her and her husband together in previous times.
Councillors to face complaints procedures. Members of a Teignbridge Council committee will decide later this week if they need to punish at least one of their own members for breaching their code of conduct. Discussions on four complaints upheld by an independent investigator will happen behind closed doors as the Council's Governance Committee goes into a so-called Part 2 session. Council meetings go into Part 2 when members feel they may have to discuss sensitive or confidential information. The councillor or councillors who were the subject of the complaints have not been named. Two separate complaints against a named councillor Jane Taylor, were not upheld and are part of the Part 1 public agenda for the meeting, which takes place on October the 2nd, or took place on October the 2nd. In the cases of the unnamed councillors, Teignbridge says the public interest in keeping the information under wraps outweighs the public interest in disclosing it. But a report to the committee goes on. The investigator has identified a breach of the code of conduct, and the committee is to determine any further actions. Sanctions could include formal censure, a requirement to apologise in writing, removal from committees, or even exclusion from council meetings. The first complaint against Councillor Taylor concerned a meeting of the council's overview and scrutiny committee in November 2024. It claimed she tried to gain a place on the committee by falsely claiming to be a substitute member, took another councillor's nameplate, and misrepresented her role, spoke over the chair of the meeting, and acted disrespectfully. The investigator decided Councillor Taylor had not been intentionally deceptive and had been confused during a politically unstable period. Their report went on. The video evidence confirmed a disagreement between Councillor Taylor and the chair during the meeting, but it did not show conduct that would bring the council into disrepute. And it concluded, the investigation found no evidence of dishonesty or misconduct that would constitute a breach of the code of conduct, staff protocols, or the Nolan principles. The complaint is not upheld and no sanctions against the councillor are recommended.
Councillors demand review of parking charges. Devon County Council is to revisit proposals to raise parking charges after a group of councillors raised concerns that the increased fees would annihilate local traders. Dawlish Councillor Rosie Dawson led a call-in of the decision, made last month, to increase Devon County Council on-street parking fees. In Dawlish, Newton Abbott and Tynmouth, the proposed parking charges would see increases of between 10% and nearly 40%. Parking areas affected include the Strand, Brunswick Place and Marine Parade in Dawlish, Newton Abbott Town Centre, Courtney Park and Ford Park, and the Den, Promenade, Lower Brook and Wellington Street in Tynmouth. At a time when traders are struggling and businesses are closing, increasing the costs of visiting areas to contribute to the local economy seems counterproductive, the call-in stated. Increases may be necessary, but it is felt these can be fairer, more considerate of local needs and not as substantial in one hit. A call-in is a procedure where councillors can request a review of a council decision. The decision is then referred to a scrutiny committee, which will decide if the decision is fair and aligns with the council's principles. The call-in on the parking charges will be considered at the next ordinary meeting of the Devon County Council Corporate Infrastructure and Regulatory Services Scrutiny Committee on November the 20th. Most of Teignbridge's pay and display car parks are operated by Teignbridge District Council or private companies, while on-street car parking is administered by Devon County Council.
Tynmouth Opera Day hits the right note. Tynmouth's Alice Cross Centre was alive with the sound of opera last Saturday, September the 27th, as 45 singers gathered in the hall for a full day of music making. The occasion was the centre's very first Come and Sing Opera Day, and according to Alice Cross Centre General Manager Peter Howell, the atmosphere was nothing short of electric. The day was led by Lana Jacobs, who trained operatically at the Royal Northern College of Music and is well known locally as a musical director of Teen Choral and Brixham Male Orpheus Choir, Tynmouth Youth Choir and the Rowcroft Choir. Her energy and expertise brought singers of all levels together, with many attendees from local choral societies keen to experience the thrill of singing opera choruses in a large group. Participants worked on 5 iconic pieces. Am I going to be able to pronounce these? I'm not sure. I'll do my best. Poltavisan Dances from Prince Igor, Habanera from Carmen, The Chorus of the Wedding Guests from Lucia di Lammermoor, The Chorus of the Hebrew Slaves from Nabucco, and as a grand finale, a rousing anvil chorus from Trovadore. The singers were supported throughout the day by pianist Anne Fairley, who brought the music vividly to life. Many attendees described the sound that filled the hall as incredible, uplifting, and proving that opera truly has the power to move and unite people. It was a wonderful time of music making, commented local historian Viv Wilson, MBE. She was among those who took part on the day. It was such a sociable day too. I hope we'll be having more of these days. The Alice Cross Centre hopes its varied event calendar will dispel its reputation as purely being a day centre for the elderly. We're not, Peter confirmed. We're a community centre and we're here for everyone. And music continues to be an important part of the centre's activities, and the Opera Day not only celebrated the joy of singing, but also brought together people in friendship and harmony, she added.
New book focuses on Dartmoor artisans. A photojournalist has focused in on Dartmoor-based blacksmiths, basket makers, wood turners in a new book. Susie Bennett moved to the Moor from London more than 10 years ago and is now championing the creatives on the Moor with her book, Artisans of Dartmoor. She has photographed and interviewed 16 craftsmen who are reviving and preserving some of Britain's oldest and rarest trades. Susie said, "I've been captivated by Dartmoor's heritage craft scene ever since I visited my local blacksmith, Greg Abel, in his Victorian forge to commission a curtain rail for my wall. It was like entering a time warp that was completely unaffected by the modern world. From there, Greg introduced me to the village potter, who introduced me to the weaver, who introduced me to the wood turner. I was completely captivated by the different craftsmen and their work. Being from London, I was suddenly put in touch with the creative and making processes, which was a real first for me." Back in 2017, she founded the Dartmoor Artisan Trail, an arts, crafts and food network linking Dartmoor's traditional craftspeople, artists and producers. The book, The Artisans of Dartmoor, collates the work of some of the craftsmen from the trail into a 244-page hardback book. Traditional skills in many parts of the UK are dying out, but on Dartmoor, the craft scene is thriving. It's thanks to a combination of factors: the moor's expansive landscapes, which inspire free thinking and creativity, an abundance of raw materials, and a supportive, collaborative creative community. Some of the talented craftsmen in the book include hide tanners, wood turners, willow weavers, and letterpress printers. For more details about Susie and the book, visit her website www.susiebennett.com. And there are several photographs, but the one that's really caught my eye was the one that was mentioned in the article, Greg Abel in his Victorian forge. I mean, it looks very much as though the picture was originally printed in sepia in the sort of browns and blacks. It really does look like a picture from a Dickensian novel. And there's good old Greg doing his stuff in the in a very smoky and dimly lit forge.
Half of homes in Devon get upgrades. More than half of Devon homes that were deemed eligible for new energy saving measures under a government grant scheme have had them installed, new figures show. The Green Homes Grant Scheme saw the government pledge millions to low energy efficiency or low income households to allow them to make energy saving changes to their homes. Friends of the Earth welcomed the scheme, but warned its progress has been patchy and unequal. Some £500 million was available across the first two phases of the scheme, with the first administered by local authorities after submissions were open between 2020 and 2022. Now, new figures from the Department for Net Zero and Energy Security show 52 households in Devon were approved for upgrades during the first phase of the scheme. To qualify, households could be identified by the local authority or apply directly for a grant. As of August, 32 separate measures had been installed in 26 Devon homes. Across England, some 27,387 homes were signed up to the scheme, with 23,821 individual measures installed across 69% of them. Rosie Downes, head of campaigns at Friends of the Earth, said upgrading the UK's poorly insulated housing stock is one of the quickest and most effective ways to cut carbon and reduce bills. While thousands of eligible homes have been upgraded under the scheme, delivery is patchy and unequal. The climate emergency and cost of living crisis mean we need a robust national plan to roll out energy efficiency upgrades consistently and fairly. This requires proper investments to make sure every home is warmer, cheaper to run, and low carbon. The measures funded by the scheme include wall, loft and roof insulation, improvements to windows and doors, installing solar panels and fitting heat pumps. The upgrades in Devon included 17 solar panel deployments and 10 loft insulation installations. Simon Francis, coordinator of the End Fuel Poverty Coalition, said every home upgraded was a step in the right direction, but warned progress should be delivered at speed and with the urgency that the energy bills crisis deserves. He added, every winter spent in a cold, damp home causes misery and health complications for millions of households. This is why the government's Warm Homes Plan must be rooted in a warmth-first principle, treating a warm, dry and affordable-to-heat home as a basic human right. And upgrades to homes must come alongside reform to electricity pricing and moves to secure our energy supply in the future. And for more information on retrofitting your home, visit Devon County Council's Warm Homes Local Grant Scheme with its or at its website.
And I've got two articles now about young carers. And the first one, number of young carers is the highest in past 5 years. The number of young carers referred to Devon County Council in 2025 is the highest in the past 5 years following a Freedom of Information Act. So far this year, 2,542 young carers are registered with Devon County Council. This number's increased year on year since 2021. A young carer is defined as someone who's aged 18 or under who helps to look after a relative with a disability, illness, mental health condition, or a drug or alcohol problem. Devon County Council commissioned Devon Young Carers to provide specialist support for the young carers who are providing high levels of care that is not really age appropriate. And my second article about carers is a lovely group supporting young carers. Young carers from across Devon are benefiting from a new initiative launched by the Exminster-based charity Westbank called the Young Carers Movement Group. It gives young carers who look after family members a platform to share their views on the support service provided by Westbank Community Health and Care Unit. They like to suggest improvements and highlight additional support for the young carers, what they would like to see basically in the future. The new group also provides a safe space to talk openly about the challenges and experiences of growing up as a carer. As a thank you, Devon Young Carers organised a special activity day for the group members, taking six young carers to Haven Banks in Exeter for a fun day of raft building. One of the young carers who took part was 17-year-old Katie from Dawlish. Her mum said Katie had an amazing time working at the workshop. She chatted non-stop about it and showed the pictures of what they were doing. She loved the raft building and all the escape rooms. She loved every minute. Katie said the experience has taught her that there is a no I or me in team, only us. Over lunch, the group was joined by representatives from Devon County Council, Post 16 Learning Participation Team, who introduced the new service dedicated to career support for young carers. And they gathered feedback on what they would like to do in the future. The young carers shared ideas which will help shape the service for the future. Paddy Agnew, service manager for Devon Young Carers, said it was a truly fantastic day, filled with teamwork, laughter and thoughtful conversations. A huge thank you to our young carers for being such an inspiring group whose ideas and contributions continue to make a real difference.
Now, I hope you're ready for the excitement of this. You're going to be introduced to a new phrase. Well, at least it was new to me, so I'm kind of assuming it was new to you. And that's leaf peeping. Okay, so the title of the article is Devon Makes the Best Leaf Peeping Destination List. Devon has been named among the best leaf peeping destinations in the country. Leaf peeping refers to the activity whereby people travel to observe and photograph the colourful foliage in the autumn months. The Southwest County came fifth on group accommodations list after having analysed thousands of holiday rental booking inquiries through its platform for autumn 2025. And the company's managing director, Ed Mourne, singled out Dartmoor as one of the best leaf-peeping destinations. Dartmoor's appeal in autumn is all about contrasts, Ed said. You have dramatic granite landscapes alongside river valleys, which can make it feel almost mythical when it's exploding with colour, Ed added. Derbyshire topped the list, with Yorkshire taking second and Cumbria third. And the article is accompanied by a photograph from Wistman's Wood. Lots of trees. Ironically, not many of them with any leaves on. Just two obituaries this week. The first one is John Reginald Chamberlain, who passed away peacefully in his home Saturday the 27th of September. He was 85. The funeral service will be held in St Paul's Chapel at Exeter and Devon Crematorium on Friday the 17th of October at 1 p.m. More details from Dawlish Funeral Care in Dawlish. And then Alex Grenfell died suddenly on the 25th of August, aged 78. And his funeral service will be held on the 13th of October at 12 noon at the Church of St. Peter the Apostle, Chowden. More details from Oliver J. Knapman Funeral Services in Tynmouth. Moving on to events, a quick reminder about the ones that you would have been told about last week. Monday the 13th of October, Holcombe Lunch Club restarts at the Castle Inn. Tuesday the 14th, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Tiverton. Wednesday the 15th, Holcombe Garden Society meet for a talk on fuchsias. Saturday the 18th, there is a tabletop sale at the Hub, Sholden. And Kent and Friends of the Force Cancer Sharing have a quiz. I'm not told where that is. I mean, it's been slotted in underneath the tabletop sale at the Hub in Sholden, so I don't know if that's there as well. And the Dawlish Garden Society meet at the Manor. Events for the following week, Tuesday the 21st of October, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Ashburton and Dartmoor. Saturday the 25th, soup and dessert lunch in aid of Force Cancer Charity, 12 to 1:30 at All Saints Church in Kenton. And at 7 p.m. on Saturday, in the Victory Hall, Kenton, there is a pub quiz to raise funds to reopen the Dolphin Pub. Also on Saturday the 25th at 12 noon at the Castle Inn in Holcombe, there is a conker competition, £1 per conker. These are supplied. Also, there's a barbecue and a raffle at that event.
Appeal for hand-knitted poppies. An appeal has gone out for more poppies to be made to join the Dawlish Poppy Wall of Remembrance, which will return this November along the railings at Dawlish Bowling Club. More poppies, hand-knitted or crocheted, are needed to add to this year's display. Any poppies donated can be added to the wall on the green fence facing the bandstand from November the 1st to the 14th. To fit, poppies must be made to about the size of the palm of a hand, knitted or crocheted in red with a black centre and two lengths of yarn attached at the centre to tie to the railings. A spokesman for Dawlish Town Council said, "Every poppy contributed will help create a bigger and more meaningful wall of poppies than ever before. Thank you for sharing your time, creativity and talent to honour and remember." And there is a photograph here of the beginning of last year's wall, and very, very attractive.
Volunteers and tech may be vital for Devon Libraries. Volunteers and technology could be the vital pillar for the future of Devon Libraries as a public consultation on a possible overhaul gets ready to start. Devon directly funds 50 libraries across the county through a single contract with Libraries Unlimited, but this agreement, valued at just over £7 million this financial year, ends in March. This has prompted Devon County Council to consider how it can juggle the pressure on its finances while supporting the library service. It is already struggling, and with a report prepared for its cabinet next week stating that to deliver the current service within the available budget, it is having to take steps such as delaying maintenance work, implementing a more cost-effective computer network, and to put in place a recruitment freeze. This is impacting on the ability to deliver published opening hours and to provide cover for when staff leave, retire, or are absent due to annual leave or sickness, the report states. Data shows there are 113,661 active users across all of the Devon libraries, with children being the most engaged group, making up 28% of total usership. Exeter has the highest engagement at 18%. Torridge and Teignbridge have the lowest of 11%. The council said digital borrowing had surged with over 1 million digital issues annually, whilst physical borrowing of books remains 22% below pre-pandemic levels.
Libraries also hosted over 12,000 events and 2024 to 2025, attracting more than 218,000 attendees, an 85% increase from 2019 to 20. Whilst people are using libraries differently, they remain a trusted and well-used space and a footprint for the council, the report added. There are 2.3 million visits to Devon libraries last year. This 12-week public consultation, due to start in November, will consider whether various factors, such as whether there should be changes to statutory opening hours, whether volunteers, technology, other funding could help extend the opening hours when a library is understaffed, and consider proposals for developing community hubs, where community organisations take control of the library, supported by a grant from the council. The consultation is due to end in January, with a formal proposal submitted to Cabinet at Devon County Council by April, and then the outcome will be implemented in May. The County Council said it's analysed how some of its peers run libraries and found that Cornwall only has 4 in-house libraries, and 27 are now run by local organisations. So in 2023, Devon County Council voted in favour of axing its mobile library service. We wait to hear what's going to happen next.
Flashing battery pack prompts RNLI call out. A flashing light was seen on the River Teen on the night of Wednesday, October the 1st, and it resulted in a call out for the volunteer crew from Tynmouth Royal National Lifeboat Institution. Her Majesty's Solent Coast Guard paged the Tynmouth crew at 9:21 p.m. after receiving reports of a flashing white light, SOS signal, seen on the River Teen. The crew from Tynmouth Lifeboat Station quickly launched and worked with mobile teams from Dawlish Coast Guard on the shoreline. They located a boat off Ringmore in Sheldon, where a battery pack on board the vessel was flashing and lighting up the cabin. An SOS is an internationally recognised distress signal that is traditionally sent by flashing a light or sounding a horn, with 3 short flashes or sounds, followed by 3 long flashes or sounds, and then another 3 short bursts. In this case, there was no emergency, but calling it in was absolutely the right thing to do, a spokesperson from Tynmouth RNLI said. We would far rather launch to a false alarm with good intent than risk someone in danger not being found, the spokesperson added. A big thank you to the vigilant member of the public who reported this.
Leakages cut by more than 10 million litres a day. South West Water has reduced the amount of water lost to leaks by more than 10 million litres a day, the water company has announced. This is thanks to the efforts of its teams and the use of new technology. Over the last 12 months, South West Water has increased the amount of leaks its teams are detecting by 93%, driven by enhanced digital tools. This has been achieved by investing in new, highly sensitive detection equipment that can detect noise from leaks hundreds of metres away, and by trialling new techniques from using dogs who snuffer out chlorine in drinking water to satellite imagery and drones, looking for signs of leakage in harder-to-reach areas, the company says. As a result, last year the company repaired more than 16,000 leaks, averaging 44 leaks per day, every day, and despite having reduced leakage by over 20% since 2020, it has plans to halve it by 2050. As well as fixing leaks on its own network, around 30% of water loss in the region comes from pipework that belongs to customers. The company says it is working hard to help customers find these leaks and to support people with repairs. Carl Little, South West Water's Water Loss and Control Delivery Manager, said, Thanks to a range of innovative technologies and techniques, we are now finding record numbers of leaks, which means our brilliant teams can focus on making repairs and saving as much water as possible when it is needed most. We also know that around 1 in 3 leaks in our region are on customer supplies, and we are here to help. I would encourage anyone who thinks that they may have a leak at home to visit our website and see the support we can offer. And at the end of this is that for more information on how to report a leak, how to check for leaks at home, visit South West Water's website.
Sea Lion wins Trail People's Choice Award. A sculpture of a sea lion was the public's favourite in this year's Tynmouth Recycled Art in the Landscape, or TRAIL, T-R-A-I-L, exhibition. More than 900 people voted for their favourite sculpture after seeing the recycled art along Tynmouth seafront between the months of July and September this year. The sea lion was designed to show the bold action is needed to protect our ocean. It was created by Make It Thursday, a social and crafting group for carers and those at risk of isolation. The environmental award went to Be Aware by Lou and Chris Chapman, which highlights how invasive species can impact the fragile balance of our planet's ecosystem. And Hazeldown Primary School recently formed an eco committee, and they won the community award for its underwater biodiversity sculpture. The outdoor school in Tiverton was awarded the Tynmouth Art Society Artist Prize for Plasticosaurus. Next summer, the trail will celebrate its 20th anniversary, and organisers are already planning a special event. And this article is accompanied by some wonderful photographs, which I'm just going to run through quickly. The sea lion, as you can imagine, is a standing lion, and from the waist down, he's a mermaid. So it's the sea lion, wonderful, wonderful thing. I understand why that was voted as the best one. A Reef of Many Hands, and this has been created by Time Saturday Group to celebrate biodiversity. And this is a wonderful colourful exhibition with fish shapes and octopus tentacles, and just making a lovely diorama. The Muldoon Buggy by Melissa Muldoon and Trevor Richardson. This was in the recycled art again, and this is a very much a small structure of the chairs, the driving seats, the wheels or the top of the wheels, all heading off with a number plate saying Doom Bug One. We've also got the Sea and the Sewage by the Starcross artist Brian Taylor in Tynmouth Recycled Art in the Landscape. And these are all blue figures who are looking a little bit unsure about whether they want to go swimming in the sea. Is probably the best way of describing it. Catching Fish by the Time Friday Group shows the importance of preserving the ocean so future generations can enjoy the beauty and food the sea gives us. And that's all based around a net and some beautiful silver crafted fish that have been put in it. And the last one, Be Aware, and that's by Lou and Chris Chapman, and they won the Trail Environmental Award, showing the bee that is that likes to eat other bees. So you do need to beware of some bees.
Salvation Army launches toy appeal. Christmas planning has already started for the Salvation Army in Newton Abbot. The festive season has begun early for the Christmas Toy Appeal, which this year is hoping to reach as many children as possible. Salvation Army staff and volunteers have joined forces with the Works store in Newton Abbot to kickstart the appeal and help make an unforgettable Christmas for local children in need. Last year's appeal, which saw generous residents donate toys, helped 700 youngsters in the area. Major Nigel Byrne from the Newton Abbot Salvation Army went along to the Works store to start the appeal. Together they are committed to making this year's toy appeal the most successful yet. The campaign aims to ensure that every child in need in the community experiences the joy of receiving a new toy on Christmas morning, especially for those who might otherwise face a disappointing festive season. The appeal encourages the public to donate new toys which can be dropped off at The Works in Newton Abbot. Additional collection points include Tesco's in Kingstainton and the Salvation Army on Union Street and Nurse Plus also on Union Street, just a few doors down. Financial donations are also very welcome, direct to the Salvation Army. Reflecting on last year's success, Major Nigel Byrne said, "We were able to help over 700 local children last Christmas. This year, we hope to match that number and perhaps even exceed it."
Rotary Club commended for continued charity support. A Tinbridge Rotary Club has been commended for its continuing support to an international charity that provides emergency shelter to families throughout the world. Dawlish Water Rotary Club has once again been recognised for its firm support for Shelterbox, one of the most effective organisations for rapidly transporting emergency aid and shelter to disaster areas around the globe. The years of Shelterbox support, headed by Rotarian Bill Handy for 10 years and now by Rotarian and Shelterbox Ambassador Gray O'Hanlon, Chair of Dawlish Water International, have led to total donations of £33,052. It has also earned the club a silver award and two bronze awards in the last 3 years. This is an amazing result and, in many respects, due to the generosity of the people of Dawlish and the surrounding area, said Gray. Many people will be familiar with the turquoise-coloured shelter box, but this has largely been superseded by shelter kits. Each kit is targeted towards particular needs. For example, a shelter kit provides tarpaulins and tools to enable families to stay in or close to damaged homes to enable rebuilding. Other kits target winter warmth, family needs such as cooking or personal hygiene, but of course tents would always be very much in demand. Currently, Shelterbox is actively involved in Pakistan following flash flooding in August, and Afghanistan and Myanmar, which originally formerly was Burma, after severe earthquakes in both countries, and in the Philippines after a super typhoon devastated several of the islands. The charity is on constant alert to help in Gaza when permitted and currently has 30,000 tents stuck in Jordan, very few of which have been allowed into Gaza. The charity has joined many other aid organisations in calling for a pause to allow humanitarian aid to enter.
Ponies blessed at pet service as the church welcomes the new priest, Azario. Dogs, a tortoise and two ponies were amongst the animals to receive blessings at a Tinbridge church service. All Saints Church, Coomintean Head, held its special pet service on Sunday, September 28th. And suffice to say, it was not your average service, for not only were there dogs, as one might expect, but there were two Dartmoor ponies and even a tortoise, but that wasn't all. The service was extra special as the congregation welcomed its new house for duty priest. Hailing from Nigeria, Priest Azario was amazed to see such a church full of pets. Churchwarden Claire Redford said, "Many thanks go to Hugh McCormack, who officiated the service, and to all of our wonderful congregation who brought along their pets. Here's to next year's pet service, and maybe some llamas can join us." There's a lovely photo at the front of the church with two people there with Dartmoor ponies who are nibbling away at the grass.
Major motion picture to be filmed on the moor. A major motion picture starring Hollywood A-lister Willem Dafoe is to be filmed on Dartmoor this autumn after planners gave permission for two temporary movie sets to be created near Widdicombe-in-the-Moor and Postbridge. Mega movie producer Universal Studios is behind American director Robert Eggers' historical thriller Werewolf, which is set in 13th century England. Mr. Eggers and his creative team were responsible for the gothic horror film Nosferatu, released at the end of last year, which brought in nearly $180 million at the box office and was nominated for 4 Oscars. Werewolf will star Lily Rose Depp, daughter of Johnny Depp, and Golden Globe Award winner Aaron Taylor-Johnson. Cast and crew will swoop into Dartmoor for 11 weeks and boost its economy from hotel stays, restaurant bookings and taxi patronage, Dartmoor National Park Authority's Development Management Committee heard. Members unanimously supported the temporary use of the two structures to the north of Sharp Tor, Widdicombe-in-the-Moor and Assicombe Hill, south of Fernworthy Forest at Postbridge for filmmaking, with associated sets, supporting vehicles, parking access and storage. The film sets will involve temporary medieval-style buildings and farmsteads being erected. Access to the Sharp Tor site will be via a temporary aluminium track once traffic leaves the B3357 Ashburton to Two Bridges Road. The area is set within a Middle Bronze Age landscape of archaeological importance and is a site of special scientific interest. Parking and services for cast and crew will be within the existing car park at Fernworthy Reservoir for that part of the filming, and the set will be accessed via tracks within Fernworthy Forest. Planning officers said there was no planned disturbance of the land, but there would be a watching brief by archaeologists. The applicants, Mirage Pictures Limited, will be required to return the land to its former condition within 6 months. Traffic controls will be set up to hold up general traffic for 10-minute periods on the main roads when filming is live, some of which will be after dark to avoid headlight disturbance. Filming is usually allowed under permitted development rights, but not in national parks or other designated land. Officers said approving these applications would be a departure from policy, but they were considered acceptable because of their temporary nature and various conditions being met. And that brings us to the end of our recording for this week. If you have any comments or suggestions, you can contact us on 07376 147 374. Your readers this week were Graham, Lynn and myself, and our producer is Mike. As usual, the copying and dispatching is a team effort. So until next time, it's goodbye from us here in the studio.
Bye!